30. Footprint. She drove to Malibu with the Blue Ant helmet in its carton beside her. It was sunny through Beverly Hills, but by the time she reached the sea, something monochrome and saline had insinuated itself. She went to Gladstone's, took the carton in with her, and stood it on the massive timber bench opposite her own, while she topped up her hyper-healthy hotel breakfast with a small chowder and a large Coke. The light on the beach was like a sinus headache. Things were different today, she assured herself. She was working for Node, and her expenses would be covered. She had decided to look at it that way, and not think of herself as Big End's employee, or Blue Ant's. There had, after all, been no real change in her formal situation. She was a freelancer, on assignment to Node to write 7,000 words on locative computing and the arts. That was the situation today, and she could deal with it. The Big End version, she was less certain of. Pirates, their boats, CIA maritime units, tramp freighters, the traffic in and hunt for weapons of mass destruction, a shipping container that spoke to Bobby Chombo. She wasn't certain of any of that. As she was paying, she remembered Jimmy's money back at the Mondrian, locked in the little keypad safe in her room, coded to open on Carlisle. She didn't know what else to do with it. Inchmail said he could tell her whether any of it was counterfeit. She'd take him up on that, she thought, then go on from there. The thought of seeing him again woke an old ambivalence. While it had never been true, as the magazines had often had it, that she and Inchmail had been a couple in any carnal or otherwise ordinary sense, they had nonetheless been married in some profound, if sexless, way. Co-creatives, the live wires of the curfew, held down and variously together by Jimmy and Heidi. She was grateful, ordinarily, to whatever fates might be, for Inchmail having found the excellent Angelina and Argentina, thereby to be translated, for the most part, out of her world. It was better that way for everyone, though she'd have had a hard time explaining that to anyone other than Inchmail. And Inchmail, never blind to the background radiation of his own singularity, would have been all too ready to agree. When she got back to the car, she put the carton on the unopened trunk and got the helmet out, fumbling with the unfamiliar controls. She put the thing on, curious as to whether anyone had been locatively creative in the immediate vicinity. A cartoonishly smooth Statue of Liberty hand, holding a torch a good 3 stories high, loomed above her, blotting out the hurtful glow of the salt metal sky. Its wrist, emerging from the Malibu sand, would have had roughly the footprint of a basketball court. It was far bigger than the real thing. It was blatant copying to have it emerging from the beach this way, and still it managed to be more melancholy than ridiculous. Would it all be like this in Alberto's new world of the locative? Would it mean that the untagged, unscripted world would gradually fill with virtual things, as beautiful or ugly or banal as anything one encountered on the web already? Was there any reason to expect it to be any better than that? Any worse? The Liberty hand and its torch looked as though they had been cast from the stuff they made beige Tupperware out of. She remembered how Alberto had described his labors in the creation of skins, textures. She remembered the microskirted Aztec princesses on his Volkswagen. She wondered where the helmet was picking up the Wi-Fi for this piece. She took the helmet off and put it back in its carton.